Uka chaka uka 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 chaka uka 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 chaka uka 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 chaka uka uka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. Lips as sweet as candy.
There we go. We are live, ladies and gentlemen. We are recording source material right now. This is Jesse Starcher. Good evening, everybody. I'm here with my good buddies, the guys, the source material podcast crew here lately, and that is one, the patriarch himself, Mark Radulich. Mark Radulich, you spoiled brat, you. How you doing?
Lamb chops. I had lamb chops for dinner. I'm so happy. I'm doing well because I had lamb chops.
Lamb chops. I don't know if I've ever had a lamb chop before. I mean, can you tell me what is the, is it tastier? Is it tender? What, sell me on a lamb chop.
It's tender. It's juicy. It's thick. It's better. I mean, steaks are good, but I mean, steaks are common. Lamb chops are a little off the beaten path and they're delicious. They're just a tasty treat.
And if you put do you put barbecue sauce or anything like that on them?
No, you marinate them. Put them in a nice marinade, and then you put them in the broiler.
Okay, all right.
You can put them in the broiler in the oven, or you can use a grill pan. But next time you're out at a restaurant, and now we're not talking rack of lamb here. That's a whole other scenario.
Okay,
you want lamb chops, nice lamb chops, tender lamb chops, and
I want to say it exactly like that when I order it.
Yes,
lamb chops,
sir. What can I get you for dinner? Lamb chops.
Make sure there's four A's in there. Yes. Lamb chops.
Think lamb. Fish flying Lambert. There's no denying. And just instead of saying Lambert, lamb chops.
Lamb chops. All right. Oh, Cooking with Mark Radulich. Always a fun show. Never been on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network before. Hey, that's all right. It's a new theme. Mark, you've done a few shows involved with cooking, at least. I know that much here with your TV party tonight. So, hey.
We did Michael Pollan's Cooked, and then we did Chef's Table Season 1. We'll eventually get to Chef's Table Season 2 and 3. And I keep being told to get out of the whole, comic book and, drama type things that we tend to do on the TV party tonight. Maybe do some more cooking shows.
Hey, sounds like you would enjoy it. That's for sure. Well, I know one man how am I supposed to segue into your podcast, Ronnie Adams? Tell me, have you ever reviewed a cooking show in somewhat capacity on Screaming Boy at all?
I mean, we've talked about Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
There you go. That's perfect. The man who's talked about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. His name's Ronnie Adams from the Screaming Boy podcast. This evening, sir, how's your monster? Is your monster kicking in yet?
Yeah. No.
You're not a fan of the monster, Mark Radulich?
I don't know what you guys are talking about, but the way you phrase that,
It's an energy drink.
The monster. Yes.
Yes. Oh, I thought you were talking about the monster in his pants.
No.
Incorrect, sir.
No.
All right. Whatever.
I can't say no enough. No. What was Mark's goal?
What was it?
Make Ronnie feel a little uncomfortable.
Success.
Yes. He wins. Getting serious here. Tonight.
Yeah, right.
We are celebrating the recent release. Now, when this airs on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, it will be out at that time of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Now, Volume 1 was a great success in my eyes. I really enjoyed that film. So I'm really excited to see what Volume 2 is going to bring. Because of that, here on Source Material, we are going to review a comic book series that came out in 2008 by Hold on a second. I want to say Dan Abnett, and I've got the creators right here. Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning with artist Paul Pelletier. It came out in 2008, and there are some very familiar faces on this on this team when you compare it to the movies. So remember that, folks. This came out, what, we're talking close to 6 years prior to the movie being released.
It's also important to note that the movie was largely inspired by this iteration of this specific iteration of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Ronnie, you're a little bit more familiar with the previous iteration of the Guardians of the Galaxy in the Marvel Universe that came out in the 90s, correct?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, you were just recently reading some from them. Is that right?
I've owned it. I've read it. not recently, I should say.
Okay, but, all right, I got you.
Pretty recently, yeah. So it was the Guardians that came out. It was more familiar with the 60s Guardians.
The 60s Guardians. So these are the guys that were, it was like in the future, correct? Like 3000 or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember seeing those on the shelf. As everybody knows out there who's listened to Source Material in the past, sometimes I go by the moniker Street Level Starch. This cosmic stuff's all above my head. And that's what Guardians of the Galaxy made me think of when I saw it back in the 90s. But here we are, you know, 2014, when Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 released, I should say just Guardians of the Galaxy. I wasn't expecting what we got in the theaters at that point in time. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed how they made a great story. And of course, you know, they had some great actors in that film as well. You guys share the same sentiment. Mark, did you enjoy the Guardians of the Galaxy film when it released there?
Oh, I love it. It's one of my favorite of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, to be honest with you. I bought it immediately when it was available for digital. And going into it, I was like you know. I was a straight-up Avengers. Captain America, Thor, Hulk, Iron Man. I wasn't really into a lot of the cosmic stuff like Quasar and Adam Warlock and the Infinity Watch, Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was funny because I remember when they announced that in Phase 2 or 3, whatever, I guess it was Phase 2, they were going to do a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I was not excited at all. Like, I do not care about this. And then I started to see trailers for it, and I was like, these are the Guardians of the Galaxy. What a bunch of a-holes. And I'm like, oh, no. Where are we going with this? But, you know, like I go see – as it got closer and as I saw more trailers for it, I was like, all right, this could be interesting. This seems fun. And then my wife and I saw it, and we loved it. I mean, like I said, my wife is not a huge fan of – you know, I bring her up because she's a really good example of, like, the non-comic book fan average person that goes to see these Marvel movies. Because obviously they have an audience outside of comic book fans. And she thought it was great. We laughed. It was I hadn't quite seen fun sci-fi fantasy adventure since Star Wars A New Hope. It was really in that vein. And it was nice to see a movie kind of return to that level of space fantasy. And so, yeah, I thought it was great. And now I'm super excited for the second one.
So looking at this first issue here, I've got the cover up here on YouTube. I know you guys can see it. I already recognize a few of the characters right off the bat. We see Star-Lord. We see Gamora. We see Drax the Destroyer, Rocket Raccoon. I'm going to give a better description of these as we start into the issue itself. But there's a couple in there that we are not used to usually seeing on the Guardians of the Galaxy for those that are familiar with the film, and that is Adam Warlock and Quasar. So be prepared because those two are a pretty two significant members of this team. Okay. Now, before we get into the issues, guys, before I start with issues 1 and 2, do you guys have anything you'd like to say? Ronnie Adams, Mark Radlich?
Yeah, because this, the Guardians, when they first started out, were not anything like you're used to in the movies. Mm-hmm. The ones in the 90s and the ones in the 60s, Yondu was actually a good guy, and he was nothing like he is in the movies.
Is that the Whistler dude?
Yeah, Yondu is Michael, I can't remember his name, Michael Rooker.
Yes.
And he was the Ravager. He was the one that was always telling people, or telling Peter Quill, if it wasn't for me, they would have eaten you. And he's like,
That's right.
You just don't tell people that, you know? he was a good guy. He was more like a Native American, and he used a bow and arrow that he could control the arrow. But he was, you know, he used like a knife or maybe a tomahawk at one time, or like an axe, of course. And but he, you know, his thing was a bow and arrow. And then you had I think it was Charlie 23, who was just, you know, he was genetically enhanced. He was strong. He was, I think it was from Mars or somewhere. And you had Vance Astro, Vance Astrovic, who was also known as Major Victory.
Uh-huh.
You had, you know, it was a very different lineup. So that's what I was used to. And then I kind of got into this. I was like, well, this is different. So it was nothing like the way it started out. This is what people are used to.
Yeah. Well, did you read this before? This came out in 2008. So did you read this before the movie actually hit, or was?
Yes, actually.
You did. Yeah. Okay. Because you're the one that suggested this, correct?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, I know we were all looking for stuff that tied in with the movie. And I think I remember you saying something about Legacy, which is the, I think that's the name of the trade for these first six issues.
Correct.
So, okay. So you were into it when they re-released this in 2008 with the new lineup.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Cool deal. So issues one and two, Star-Lord Peter Quill is putting together a team to address the damage the Annihilation Wave has caused to the universe. Now, I want to give you just a real quick background on the Annihilation Wave, because they really don't talk a lot about it in the issues, other than the fact that it's something that occurred. It was a huge Marvel event that occurred, and I'll read the quick blurb is, in an effort to expand his empire, Annihilus led an invasion army from the negative zone into the positive matter universe to basically claim the positive matter as his universe as his own territory. While doing this, he had this huge army, and it ripped like fractured space and fractured, I want to say fractured space, fractured time, but it caused a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So then what they've got to do, Peter Quill, I think if I remember correctly, he feels a little guilty because he was part of the reason the Annihilation Wave happened. So what he's decided to do is put together a team to try and be proactive about stopping things like this before they get out of hand. Now, the team, we've already talked about Star-Lord, Drax the Destroyer, a green-skinned warrior, Adam Warlock, a cosmic being who can manipulate energy, Gamora, a Zen-Huberian with advanced combat skills, Rocket Raccoon, a tactical and demolitions expert who is, in fact, a sentient raccoon, and Quasar, a lady who is half Kree, half Eternal, and possessor of the quantum bands. Their mission in this first issue is to stop the Universal Church of Truth. They have this temple ship that's out of control, and apparently it's entering a fissure in space and exploding. If this thing explodes, it could cause a massive spatial disaster. We find that Warlock is more concerned with what will actually come out of the fissure if they don't get that taken care of first. And what actually ends up coming out of this is like this rat, this huge Cthulhu-like alien thing, tentacles all over the place. Luckily, they succeed in beating it back and saving the day by Rocket Raccoon's explosives detonating the entry point of the beast. Throughout the issue, we are peppered with how Star-Lord approached each member and convinced them to join the team. We also learn about the base of their operations, which is it's kind of like a facility based inside of a celestial's head called Nowhere, K-N-O-W-H-E-R-E. The head of security for Nowhere, we kind of get a little bit of glimpse, I think, in this first issue, is a dog by the name of Cosmo, a talking cosmonaut dog with psychic powers. We also meet Mantis, who is kind of like the what is the Batman analog for that person that sits behind the keyboard and kind of directs them?
Oracle.
Thank you. She's kind of like the Oracle of the team, where she's an empath, telepath, pyrokinetic, and she can also see into the future somewhat. Now, by the end of issue one, we find out that before they can decide on a name, because throughout the issue, Rocket Raccoon's throwing ass kickers of the fantastic at them, trying to figure out a good name for the team. But before they can come up with a name, the team must gather their forces again and head out to a rock that appeared out of another fissure in space with a curiously familiar figure holding a red, white, and blue shield with a star in the middle encased in a block of ice. Does that sound familiar to anybody out there?
No.
But Swerve, issue two, swerved me. You know I was all excited, Ronnie.
Yeah, you were.
Last night. Issue two rolls around, and as the team lands on the rock, they start to realize that there are familiar pieces encased in the ice, one of which is part of the front gates of the Avengers Mansion. But they are soon attacked by some crazy-looking tentacles again. During this battle, a thawing process commences on the body that we saw frozen in ice. this figure that emerged and joins the fray by sending Captain America's red, white, and blue shield through one of the monster's tendrils. As the shield comes back to the owner's hand, we see it's none other than Vance Astrovik, Major Victory of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And he soon falls over from exhaustion. The team escapes with Vance back to Nowhere just as the rock explodes. Back on Nowhere, as Vance recovers, we're treated to kind of like what life is on Nowhere. It's just not like a regular ship. It's kind of like a community or there's a population of Nowhere. There's a marketplace. There's all sorts of other crazy stuff. And so they got their base of operations out of this place called Nowhere. Now, we find out that Vance, Major Victory, has lost his memory, and he can't recall his purpose, but he feels there is a reason that he is there. Now, shortly thereafter, the team then chases after another fissure on a Dyson sphere. So there's another fissure that opens up. It's near this thing called a Dyson sphere, which, by the way, I just learned what a Dyson sphere was about 2 years ago. Picture this, all right? The sun, and then a facility built to encapsulate the sun and harness all its energy, and then another thing built around that to pretty much harbor life. Okay, if we built like a big thing around the sun and then we could all move to the sun, unlimited solar energy. Hey, all right, there you go. That's the whole thing about a Dyson sphere. So they get to this Dyson sphere. Once they get there, they notice there's something amiss. But they are soon attacked by the Universal Church of Truth yet again, these guys who have deemed the team an enemy of the faith. And that's kind of where we leave issue two. I'm taking the first two issues because I get my part out of the way, make you guys wait. So I get to pick my talking point. And really the only thing I wanted to do was kind of bring up Major Victory because he seems to be the wild card out of this. Clearly we built all the way up to issue one, bring him back into issue two. And he doesn't know what he's there, why he's there. Ronnie, you seem to be a little bit more aware of who this guy is. Do you have any more background that you can give us in regards to Major Victory?
His name is Vance Astro, and I don't know how well known he actually is. Vance Astrovik, and he was known as Marvel Boy, and he was part of he's a telepath and a telekinetic. You know, he has telekinetic powers, kind of like Marvel Girl of the X-Men. I'm trying to figure out. I can't remember the name. Night Thrasher, Namorita,
Speedball.
What was
New
their
Warriors?
Name? New Warriors. He was part of the New Warriors for a while, and I think he and Firestar had a thing at one time. He was known as Marvel Boy, and then as Justice. He was in jail for something, and then I didn't quite follow along completely with his storyline. I mean, it was interesting, but it wasn't one of those things where I had to know what happened to him. Mm-hmm. But as it went along, I started reading this, and I was like, well, that's interesting. I didn't realize they were the same people until I realized, you know, how goofy I was for not realizing Vance Astro and Vance Astrovik were the same guy. So later on in life, he turned out to be a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy in the year 3000.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this dude, Mark Radlich, when he first showed up? Were you thinking it was Captain America at the end of issue one?
Yeah, I thought they were alluding to maybe like an alternate universe, Captain America, frozen in ice, having no connection. I didn't know who the hell he was. So when they finally did reveal him, I mean, look, I liked the first six issues of this run. I enjoyed this storyline. His parts of it were not my favorite.
You didn't like it. You didn't like it.
Not that I didn't like it. It's just they weren't my, you know, I was, when the team was interacting and doing stuff together, I enjoyed it. His little subplot, I wasn't crazy about.
Well, okay. Did you have any idea? You said you didn't know who this guy was.
Let me correct myself. It wasn't because of time travel or anything like that. It was an alternate timeline.
Yeah. Earth 691.
Yeah.
Not the 619. That's where Rey Mysterio is from.
Booyaka, booyaka. But that's, you know, to clear, make what I was saying a little clearer.
I got you. Timeline. So, Mark, you didn't have any idea who this guy was. You didn't know anything about the history of this dude. You'd never seen him before. Up until you read this issue recently, right?
No.
Okay. All right. I kind of figured you were going into a blind, so which I can understand. That it probably held more weight for me when I saw him because I was like, okay, I know I've seen this guy before.
No one can fault you for that, Mark. No one at all.
I don't think Guardians of the Galaxy. I say it wasn't that popular of a title. Gosh.
No. Yeah.
From back in the 90s, I think Jim Valentino, before he went to Image, was on that title.
As we've discussed on the episode before this, it had a foil cover or a hologram cover. That is why Ronnie bought it.
I'm sorry. You got to understand. They sold away their X-Men. They sold away Spider-Man. They'd already started to do some stuff with the Avengers. There was only so much they could do with it. And they're still trying to make movies and expand their cinematic universe. You know, so when it came to like Guardians of the Galaxy, they realized they were scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they were like, well, what else you got?
What do we got? That's why I was so concerned. I was so concerned because I didn't read this title at all. I'm glad you did, Ronnie, before the movie came out. But when it comes to they say, oh, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, we're going to have a movie. I'm like, the first thing I think of is like, OK, we're going to have a movie about the characters that take place in 3000 AD, not even related to the Marvel Universe in any way. Little did I know I should have researched it just a little bit more. But luckily,
you know, the hilarious thing about Marvel is Marvel and other people have said this, but it bears repeating. Marvel makes a hit out of characters where, you know, one's a talking tree, the other one's a raccoon, you know, and it's a bunch of like weird space stuff that didn't even sell well when it, you know, when it was a comic book. Meanwhile, DC can't get a Flash movie together.
Oh, it's disgusting.
The 90s version, the Peter Quill and the Gamora and Drax sold better than the 60s version, mm-hmm. to my knowledge.
Really?
Yeah, to my knowledge. But yeah, you're completely right. I mean, shoot, they made a hit out of Ant-Man, and a lot of people didn't realize who Ant-Man was. They're like, Ant-Man, what the crap is this?
Right, but at least Ant-Man had the prestige of being an original Avenger.
Not the one that they put out, though.
No, sure. Not
Scott Lang.
Not Scott Lang.
Never Scott Lang.
Hey, I wanna point out the fully they did to us on issue 2 here. Okay. There is a fully formed Groot on the front of that cover, and he is not fully formed throughout these first 6 issues in any way. We should let our listeners know that this is the Groot, I think, that starts out in this series. Something happened to him, and he's pretty much just like what we see at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, the first movie, where he's a little tiny tree, and that's kind of what he is throughout these first 6 issues.
Yeah.
Another deceiving cover by the Marvel family here.
I really enjoyed this team and their interactions. I also like the way that the writers and the artists would do like
the diary or the interview.
Yeah.
The briefing.
It's got a specific name. Confessionals. They would do these confessionals like you would see like on The Real World or whatever. And I thought that gave you an opportunity to get to know the characters a little bit better. Because again, when I'm going into this cold, and yeah, I know them from the movies, but you know, like we've read so many bad comics lately where things just aren't explained and the art is mishmash. And you know, this was very clean. And I liked the team dynamic. You know, they were like moderately dysfunctional but powerful, and you know, like you could see them trying to gel as a team, but there were definitely some issues. So I really enjoyed it. And, you know, when we get to the end of the 6 issues and you find out what happened to them, I was kind of sad with the way that it ended. And like, yeah. I wanted more of what this team was doing and what it was about. And I have to say, like, the setting up of, you know, Adam Warlock talking about the fissures in space and saying, look, we are all about trying to get these fissures fixed and, you know, repair. I like the idea that they're coming at this from the standpoint of view of, not one, but 2 huge cosmic events have happened that have damaged space. Mm-hmm. And out of necessity, this team is coming together to fix the problems that this is causing. I really like that.
One of the things I wanted to make sure to bring up was the portrayal of Drax, who, again, if you only are familiar with the films, I wasn't used to Drax actually speaking in complete sentences.
Mm-hmm. Well, Drax was a human.
Okay.
Yeah, Drax was from Earth, and that's why he can speak. That's why he can talk good. But he speaks in. He's not as literal as he is in the movies. And
yeah,
the movie, they kind of leave him as you know, whatever. I don't know what planet they said he was from, or even if they did. I don't think they did. He wasn't who he is in the movies. He was a human, and he was created. He was genetically enhanced to kill Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
That was his whole purpose. And his daughter was turned into Moondragon, who apparently had a thing going on with the current Quasar, which is the chick Quasar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. In Mark Radulis terms, that broad.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. So issues 3 and 4 here. All right. So we open up issue 3. Look at this cover. I mean, that is ominous. The team stuck on the Dyson Sphere are battling the warriors from the Universal Church of Truth, all the while trying to solve the mystery of the population of the Dyson Sphere that registers on all their instruments, yet there's no sign of them. There's this huge population that has somehow disappeared. Somehow all their instruments are saying, no, it's still here. But you want to know why there's no sign of them? Because after playing with genetics, they're all one big globulous life form now absorbing everything in their path. They call it the blob. Well, I call it the blob. The team is able to escape this threat by frying them with the inner core of the sun, but not after the ever attractive Gamora sacrifices her life and limb to activate the inner shielding. And now she lives through it, but she is horribly burnt. She's got a healing factor, so, you know, at some point she'll recover.
No big.
and one of the Universal Church of Truth, those warriors, some of them were absorbed by the blob. Now, back on Nowhere, Vance Astrovik, Major Victory, is attacked by someone he vaguely recognizes. It's a person by the name of Starhawk. Now, this cover of issue 3 shows you what Starhawk looks like. A big, big dude, got these wings, crazy things coming out of the top of his helmet. He's got these, I wouldn't say Wolverine-like claws, but he's definitely got 3 claws coming off of his hand.
All right, it's Azrael from Nightfall.
Hey, very good. There you go. So anyway, Starhawk appears, and immediately there's this fight between him. He attacks Major Victory. This fight wrecks portions of the station, putting the residents on edge. And the battle ends when Starhawk disappears, never saying a word throughout the whole fight. Now, issue 4 starts Secret Invasion. Yeah. Secret Invasion was a huge crossover that took place clearly in 2008.
Imagine that, a crossover from Marvel.
Where the Skrulls, a shape-changing alien race, decided to invade Earth, okay? So Secret Invasion is not just limited to Earth here. We're also seeing the effects out here in middle of space and on Nowhere, where there is a bomb that's detonated on Nowhere, and it's soon found out that there are Skrulls present on the base because the dead bodies resort back to their original form. So there's Skrulls, unbeknownst to the population of Nowhere, there's Skrulls amongst the base possibly plotting and may be responsible for the blast. So mistrust ravages the team as no one can now believe that the other one is who they say they are. We've got Quasar accusing Drax and Drax accusing. So, I mean, nobody believes anybody. And it's just, go ahead.
Can I just complain about that? Because didn't anyone learn anything from Deep Space Nine? That when you're dealing with shapeshifters, when you meet with somebody, you cut your hand to make sure you're who you say you are.
Mark, that's a pretty damn deep Star Trek reference, okay? When you start referencing Deep Space Nine, I mean, your nerddom, it's showing.
Your nerd is showing, sir.
Yeah, put your nerdhood back in its sheath.
No. I mean, I always thought like that they handled the shapeshifter thing really, really well. Like anytime, like there was an episode and the first thing the Klingon said is, let's make sure we're all who we say we are. And they all cut their hands.
Then what happens then? Do they do a blood test or kind of like,
if you cut your hand and you bleed, like normally they know you're who you say you are. If you cut your hand and you know, nothing happens, they know you're a shapeshifter.
Okay. Brilliant.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately that is not the case in Marvel Comics, Mark Radulich, as we find out that the Skrulls are pretty damn good at being shapeshifters. I mean, not only can they evade, like, you know, sight, you know, if you look at a Skrull, you're not going to be able to tell that person's a Skrull if they've shapeshifted into a human or humanoid or whatever. Cow. That's happened in the past. But also, it they can evade sensors that are on the ship, or excuse me, on the base. They can evade sense. I mean, they even asked Drax, "Hey, how about can you smell them out?" Nope, can't even do that. They've had their whole race is based upon deceiving somebody and making somebody else think they are what they are. Now that there's this mistrust that there may be a Skrull here, the Skrulls have not got a good reputation in the universe, just to let everybody know. They're pretty plotty. You know, they're not to be trusted. But this is further hampered by some council members who have come to the Nowhere, and they believe that supplying Nowhere as the base of operations for the Guardians of the Galaxy may not be in the interest for everyone there. We've got a possible Skrull bomb going off. We got all sorts of stuff that have happened with this guy that appeared out of nowhere to attack Vance Astrovik, Major Victory. Now we also find out that Star-Lord has had actually had Mantis. Remember the lady I was talking about, who's a telepath, the Oracle lady. She had influenced the minds of the team so that they would join Peter Quill in. For the Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, Drax actually overhears this in a conversation by Mantis and Star-Lord. And at the end of the issue, at the end of issue four, the team's actually trying to find Drax, who is missing and has gone rogue. I mean, the last panel was Drax the Destroyer with a gun in his hand, and he's like, "Chick, chick," and that's the end of issue four. So stuff is about to go down. I mean, I don't know who this Starhawk dude is. I don't know, you know, who's a Skrull, who's not. Here's the front cover of issue four here with a Skrull with Peter Quill's helmet on and some burning bodies in the background of the Guardians of the Galaxy, I assume.
I can't believe how busy these issues are. Like, you have the Universal Truth thing going on. You have the Skrull thing going on. There's like a mini subplot where the Lumineers are like, you know, witch hunt to get the Guardians out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of that is because Drax keeps going to their teleporter and not telling anyone about it. And then, you know, and then so they are assuming that he's the one that's set. I want to say, is this is the one where the bomb goes off, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The bomb goes off in issue three. So everybody's kind of, I think it's issue three or issue four, one or the other. Issue four. Sorry.
So, and they think it's Drax because Drax keeps going to the teleporter.
He's not logging these trips that he's making. So they're kind of curious, what the hell are you doing, man?
I'd say I really enjoyed this part of the series, even though it's very, very busy. And it just seems like the writing was sort of all over the place, but it still had a nice flow to it. They were able to weave a lot of these things together. It had the benefit of giving all the characters a lot to do. I think my favorite character in all of this, though, is Cosmo the dog.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's where I was going, too. I love Cosmo, who's not just some simple dog, either. I mean, he's head of security.
Right. You know, and I love the way they make him talk. And it's just like, you know, he's got that Russian accent. Mm-hmm. In Soviet Russia.
Yeah. Dog talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought it was great. It was just like I am man's best friend, Peter Quill, you know, that sort of thing. I got a kick out of it. You know, I think the one thing, again, I wasn't crazy about was the Starhawk stuff. Because again, they introduce it, a fight happens, and then just as quickly it goes away, and there's no explanation for it. And even later on in later issues, when they do finally, I don't think they ever really give a great explanation. Well, I mean, I read all the way to issue 12 because I have the full 1 through 12 volume, and it's not like 7 through 12 gave great explanations either.
Oh, really?
No, I
figured it would be something they'd wrap up in the next six.
No, not really.
Well, that's unfortunate.
I mean. It's just
what
you get a little bit more, but not a tremendous amount, not a satisfying amount of information.
Yeah.
And then at the end of 12, at the end of issue 12, they're headlong into the next big crossover event at the time, which was War of Kings. So it's like it's still kind of lingering out there what this whole deal is. But the other stuff I thought was interesting. There's the other issue, you know, where you start to see the fissures between Star-Lord and Adam Warlock, where Star-Lord's trying to appease the Lumineers and make peace.
Yeah, he's a politic guy. He's the guy that's trying to keep it all together and play politics. And
right, and Warlock's like, no, you promised me that we were going to be answerable to nobody. It's funny. It has echoes of Civil War. you know, the idea of, you know, Captain America in the role of Warlock going, we should be answerable to ourselves, and Star-Lord sort of playing the Iron Man role of, you know, we have to live, you know, we have to live with these people. We kind of have to live with their rules. It's not the worst thing ever to have some supervision, you know, and some rules. And Adam Warlock's like, nope, that's not what I signed on for.
Right.
Now, here's the thing. And I'm going to interject a little bit of comic book history here and assume that this might try and support the reason why he may feel that way. Soon after the events of the Infinity Gauntlet, he is in charge of the Infinity Gauntlet, and there's immediately a trial afterwards. And this is takes place in the, I just read this trade probably about a couple years ago. This is, what's the one that come after the Infinity Gauntlet? Was it Infinity Watch, Ronnie?
Infinity Watch, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, Warlock and the Infinity Watch, where he's put on trial by, like, the cosmic beings of, you know, the Marvel Universe. All the big names are out there. Galactus, blah, 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 whoever you could think of that are huge in when it comes to Marvel Cosmic. Put this man on trial. I say man because I probably shouldn't use that term. But regardless, he felt that he should not even be judged by these beings. Mm-hmm. And these were like, I mean, these were celestials. You know, when a little piddly ass council comes in and says, you guys need to kind of tone it down and maybe go by our rules. Adam Warlock, yeah, he's going to have problems with it.
Right.
He's got a history of having problems with authority, especially when, you know, the Living Tribunal shows up and you're like, ah, screw you. Let's go ahead and continue, because now we got Vance Astro, who's, like I said, a wild card. We don't know much about him. His intentions seem good. He just seems really confused. Then we got Starhawk showing up, wrecking stuff, trying to get at Vance Astro. What's his beef? What's his problem? We don't know, but let's go ahead. We'll get into issues 5 and 6. So the news of Drax going rogue does not sit well with the council members, who have now issued orders to bring him in. There had been evidence that Drax was using the Continuum Cortex, as Mark alluded to there, a device that allows speedy travel through teleportation. He was using that without actually logging the use of it. So now things are kind of pointing towards Drax as maybe possibly being involved into what's going on in one of his roles. Now, Quasar decides to go after Drax and is encouraged to do so by Gamora. Gamora actually states, either we are a team and look out for each other, or we're nothing. So when Quasar finds Drax, he is actually setting what they call a synaptic disruptor charge. That doesn't sound too pleasant. A device that will possibly cause everyone within the radius, basically the whole base of nowhere, to go brain dead. Starhawk again reappears, but this time in female form, and warns the team that Major Victory smells of dead universes, and the Guardians of the Galaxy have started way too early. We also find out that Cosmo, our beloved cosmonaut dog, actually has had knowledge of Skrulls being on the ship. Just as Adam Warlock tracks them down, Cosmo and Warlock are about to go at it and engage in a furious battle. And at the end of issue 5, Drax flips the switch to kill everyone for about a minute and a half. You see, achieving this allowed everyone to appear dead. And once revived, after that minute and a half of everybody being brain dead, the Skrulls aboard the ship were no longer able to mask themselves, giving Drax and Quasar the location of the Skrulls. But we know who is already there, and that's Cosmo and Warlock, who wake up and are about to go back at it. But Cosmo shows Warlock what exactly is going on. And just as Star-Lord, the rest of the team, and the members of the council arrive, we find out that the Skrulls that Cosmo is working with are actually refugees that have recently escaped the Nowhere to hide, and the warmongers of the Skrull race hated them so much that they attempted to sabotage them before they initiated an invasion. And this Skrull war that is about to be waged is going to be waged against Earth. Secret invasion. Dun, dun, dun. All right. So at the end of the issue, Drax lets the rest of the team know about Star-Lord's tampering with their minds. On a very melancholic note, the team actually leaves Star-Lord dejected and leave him there. And the whole team appears to fall apart before his eyes. Mantis, meanwhile, is very upset as she swears that this was not the future she was shown, and she does not understand what has changed. But the final panel shows a very menacing grin on the face of the male Starhawk. So again, whatever Starhawk is, at the end of issue six, we can probably assume that it has caused the breakup, I guess we'll call it. I'm putting that in quotes because I don't know if they officially break up, but they certainly seem like they're going their separate ways. Because Rocket Raccoon even says, you know, didn't we just have a team a few seconds ago? As everybody kind of walks their separate ways, not liking what Star-Lord has just done to them and manipulated them into doing. And that ends issue six, kind of a cliffhanger. And just like Mark said, it's kind of a bummer. But Ronnie Adams, I think I gave you the opportunity to pick a talking point here of issues five and six.
It was kind of like the same thing as Mark said. I mean, there are so many storylines and so many things going on with this, but it's done so well. And except, you know, the whole Starhawk thing was kind of confusing, but there's so much going on that this is hard to pick one talking point. But the making of a great team is that they can go through something as big as that they're going through and then come out the other side as a team again. And you know they're not just going to end it on six books.
this was an ongoing series for a little while.
Yeah,
I don't think they had planned on just saying, "Hey, this is going to be a 12-issue one shot or anything like that." So yeah,
let's just bum everybody out and say, "Oh, they had a really cool team, but then they screwed the pooch."
Mm-hmm.
It's really odd to see Peter Quill, who is made out to be more of a flippant character. You know, not really caring about what authority has to say about him or anything else. It's really odd to see him saying that, well, no, we need to be policed. We need some sort of authority or, you know, some sort of
governing that, body.
Yeah. We need to be watched.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that we're doing what's best. Yeah. But even in the later, later issues and later series, you know, you see Star-Lord as more of a on the fly kind of guy, not really having a plan or anything like that. Mm-hmm. In the new one that I started reading, Kitty Pryde was actually Star-Lord. Because she and Peter Quill had a thing going on.
That's right.
And they were in love and they were engaged. And he actually had to take up the mantle of king of his father's home planet.
Mm-hmm.
So she grabbed the jacket and the mask and the guns and became Star-Lord. That's also the time that Ben Grimm was a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And so was Agent Venom.
Agent Venom was. That's right.
Yeah.
I like how the Skull storyline was resolved. That they were refugees. I thought the stuff with Drax was interesting. I first of all, I love the fact that Drax killed everybody.
He did, yeah. Too. He took some boys out. And then he took everybody out.
It just was like, I only killed you a little bit. Yeah. You psychos. But I thought, like his plan, exactly. And that goes to what I was saying before about Deep Space Nine. You know, it was just like, I needed to know who the Skrull and who isn't. This was the way to do it, you know, all at once. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was great. I like the little relationship between him and Quasar. You know, like she's really trying to like help him and make sure he doesn't go off the reservation. But he's all annoyed that, you know, they're suspicious of him and all this other stuff. So I thought that subplot was interesting. They really didn't resolve anything with the
Universal Church. Yeah. No, I was going to say that kind of like that's kind of left hanging out there. I didn't even bring that up. Like the end of one of the issues, they wanted was like the DNA of Adam Warlock. Now they have had a history that's actually talked about in this book, but they really did have an extensive history where the Universal Church worshipped Adam Warlock. You know, that had that tiny little bit at the end of that one issue where they were like, okay, if that's Adam Warlock, then what do we have in the cocoon? And you see the signature cocoon laying there at the end of that issue. But yeah, there's not much else that happens after that.
Well, that's the thing is like they left a lot of plot threads just out there and unanswered. And then they broke the team up, which I was really frustrated with. I mean, I'm not going to say, like I said, I think overall I enjoyed the series, the first six issues. And I'll go ahead and say I enjoyed all 12 issues that I read, even though we're only talking about the first six. But it was a little frustrating that they broke the team up so soon. You still follow the adventures of the team in their disparate directions. You know, you have What's-His-Face going in one direction, Drax going in one direction, and, you know, Star-Lord has his own thing. Rocket Raccoon kind of restarts the team with some different members. And it's like, okay, that's all well and good, but I wish they had, like, kept the team that we started with together for the next six issues and resolved a little bit more of these stories.
Mm-hmm. Now, I usually ask you some open-ended questions here in regards to like writing or art. What I've decided to do, since you usually don't seem like you're too comfortable critiquing art, other than you just like, you know, if it looks good and tells the story, great. But I'm going to give you got a number scale, 1 to 5. All right, Mark Radulich, 1 to 5. What would you give Abnett's and Lanning's writing here on Guardians of the Galaxy, these first 6 issues?
I'd give it a 4.
All right. And how about the art?
Same
thing.
I mean, right. I could follow what was happening. It wasn't confusing. I mean, let's put it this way. If Wacky Raceland was like a 2, mm-hmm. then this is definitely a 4.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
If Wacky Raceland was a 2, you're definitely being very generous.
Oh, come on. The Wacky Race Bot. Anyway.
Don't talk to me, sir.
All right, Ronnie Adams, issues 5 and 6. Did you have anything else you'd like to say or give us your final thoughts? How you want to do this, man?
No, it was, I mean, I was certainly engrossed in the whole storyline. This is your introduction to the current roster of the Guardians. So, I mean, I loved it. I loved every page of the whole storyline, everything.
I was enthused when I thought it was Captain America, but regardless, when we found out it was Vance Astrovik and we were reality hopping here, that really intrigued me. And the whole, I know I've seen Starhawk before. I don't know if it's another Guardians of the Galaxy character or whatever. I didn't do any research on that, but I know I've seen Starhawk before. So I was like, okay, these characters feel familiar. And I was like, I was really excited to kind of read about that. And of course, we don't get much of an answer. We get more of a cliffhanger.
More questions, yeah.
At the end of issue 6. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I think as far as 6 issues go, we're talking, I think I read it all in an hour. Mm-hmm. So it's not horribly long. It's about the right length. We got our characters fleshed out pretty well in the first issue, what their motivations were. We have the plot that's set up pretty well. I didn't mention about how Mantis, you know, secretly spoke to us, or the person that was supposedly debriefing and said, oh, there's a traitor among them. Well, yeah, we kind of figured that out as things go along. Some people were acting kind of shady. And of course the Skrulls are involved, but again, yeah, there was a lot of plot to be had here. I thought it was very good. I think that I wouldn't mind covering the next 6 at some point. So we'll keep that on the platter. Maybe
I'll go you one better. I really enjoyed this. And like, I've been buying random trades here and there. Like, you know, I pick up this and I pick up that. And like, I don't go beyond like volume 1 of anything other than maybe Harley Quinn. I have 2 volumes of that. This is one where I'm going to complete the series.
You are?
Yeah.
What did it run to?
25, I believe.
Okay.
So I'm going to pick up the next one, which covers the War of Kings storyline. I'm definitely going to finish this off. And then I threw on a bunch of other things too. Like I threw on the Groot trade paperback for his limited series. And then there was a Rocket and Groot. There's a couple of Rocket and Groot volumes out there.
I've heard those are fun.
Yeah, I do those on there too. I tell you what, it's funny how things change, because you know I've been reading a lot of like I told you guys, I read the Power Girl and Harley Quinn limited that was captured
and you
in a trade
about it.
Yeah, I mean, comic books are escapism, and I know that a lot of the stuff has gotten super serial, and you know, it's trying to deal with a lot of current issues. But I find myself being attracted to stuff that's really far out, you know, that like I wasn't into the cosmic stuff outside of the Fantastic Four growing up. And now that I feel the need to sometimes escape reality, the more cosmic and the more fun and the more the comics not taking themselves too seriously, the happier I am. And I found that reading, you know, between Guardians of the Galaxy and the Harley Quinn Power Girl book, I found 2 situations where there was equal parts humor, equal parts fantasy, and, you know, in space. And I enjoyed that. It gives me a break from the world we're living in, which I definitely need a break from.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at the lineup of the current Guardians of the Galaxy, of course, it's Drax, Gamora, Groot, Star-Lord, and Rocket. But you look at the former members, Agent Venom, Angela, which is a...
I know that one from the Image Universe.
Yeah, they actually acquired Angela from the Image Universe, who was in Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Bug, which is in the second formation of the team, as you move on from issue 7 through 12. who was part of the Micronauts as well. He's not very good. Agent Venom, Angela, Bug, Captain Marvel, Cosmo actually joins the team.
Oh, the dog.
Mm-hmm.
He's all about wanting to join them on their adventures in these first six. I remember he mentions that a couple times about how much he wanted to actually join the team maybe at some point.
Jack Flagg, who was a partner of Captain America at one time. You know, he's got superhuman strength and durability and all that. And that's pretty much it. Iron Man, Kitty Pryde, Major Victory, Mantis, Martyr, Moondragon, Thing, and Adam Warlock. All of these characters are, I don't want to say B-list, but are characters that you don't really associate with the current, like Mark said, the world that we currently live in.
Mm-hmm.
They're more fantastic characters. They're out there. I mean, like you don't really expect, you know, a giant rock man to deal with other things other than
or a tree
or a giant tree or you know, things like and the writers don't take themselves or the book too seriously. Bendis actually did some work on it, and I love Bendis, and Bendis has always been a lot of comedy, you know, mixed in with the seriousness of the comic book, you know, of the storyline that's going on. It's so much fun. And this title, Guardians, is, you know, I can honestly say that it's one of my favorite titles, and will continue to be, because just like Mark said, it's fun, and it's, you know, it doesn't take itself too seriously.
You know, so I'm looking at my collection of trades that I've already read, and I have, you know, like Joker, the, you know, Death of the Family, where he's cut his face off and he's cutting their faces off.
Yeah, that was gruesome.
I don't even want to go into the death of a death in and
you know, old man Logan, you know, I had mated with She-Hulk because she's the only one that could take the face.
Like, yeah, right. First of all, and second of all, his family ate people.
Yeah, you know. Meanwhile, we have a nice, fun story here. No one's being eaten or raped or having their face cut off.
Right.
And I'd like to also say no one turned into a building.
Yeah, yes. No one turned into there were no cars to form the wacky race bot.
You know, no one turned into a building and fights a giant mustard creature. You know, it was really nice to read, like, just a fun story that didn't confuse the fuck out of me.
Right.
Mark Rattle's blurb on the back, promotion for Guardians of the Galaxy. No one turned into a fucking building. A+.
I'm okay with that.
My bar is low.
Oh, mercy.
Wonderful.
I liked it. And
nobody turned into a building.
Nobody turned into a building, and it wasn't confusing.
Nobody was raped. No one turned into a building. This met my minimum criteria.
All right. We're bringing our discussion of Guardians of the Galaxy 1 through 6, 2008, to a close here, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my guests here. Let's go ahead. We'll get into plugs. Ronnie Adams, sir, what do you have to plug here for your shows and yourself?
We do the Screaming Boy podcast, which is we really deal with the things that we like, which is more nerd culture centric. You know, we talk about movies, comic books, video games, wrestling, just about anything that we want to talk about. We just recently had the Top Shelf Titans. We welcome them to the Screaming Boy podcast family, and they talked about their mock NFL draft. Kind of tune into that. Or no, definitely tune, not kind of, definitely tune into that, see how their draft went against the actual NFL draft. We will be releasing another episode due to, once again, some technical difficulties on my end. It's a little late, but it will be out in the next day. We actually finished up the Radulation Broadcasting Here in My Car Week, and we talked about the famous cars through cinema history, which was a lot of fun. We mentioned the Aston Martin, Herbie the Love Bug. That was Jesse's favorite right there. Gotta love some Herbie. So it was a lot of fun to talk about that, and we'll be very soon we'll be recording we'll be going live and recording an overview of all things Mystery Science Theater 3000, because Netflix just released Mystery Science Theater 3000: The Return, which I absolutely love. because I was a big Misty in the day. Mystery Science Theater 3000, if you don't aren't familiar with it, it ran from 89 to 99, and it dealt with Joel, who was banished to the satellite of love, and to have some company. He created two robots, Tom Servo and Crow T Robot, and the mad scientists that sent him there torture him by making him watch horrible, horrible B movies, and they sit in the theater and riff on them the entire time. So that ran for forever, and through a Kickstarter campaign, it returned, and now they have they went through two hosts, Joel and Mike, and now they have Jonah, a frequent guest or co-host of the Nerdist podcast with Chris
Hardwick.
I almost said Chris Hansen, but he doesn't deal with nerd podcasts. He deals with some other heavier issues in life. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have Josh Klanders on that, who's a big fan, probably a bigger fan than me, to be honest with you. And also the new one has Felicia Day, whom I've always had a huge crush on.
Homina, homina, homina.
We actually, any kind of social media, Facebook, search Screaming Boy Podcast, Instagram, search Screaming Boy Podcast, Twitter, Screaming Boy PR. We have an Instagram, but I believe it's the devil. A Snapchat, but I believe it's the devil, so we don't use it. It's not the devil. I just don't understand it. I don't get it. I have Instagram. Why post pictures on Snapchat? I'm just old and you deal with it. So look us up on there. Give us a like. Give us a follow. iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, which you are listening to right now. We are amongst the phenomenal shows on this wonderful network.
Very good. Mark, the schedule.
All right. Well, depending on when you're listening to this, if you're listening to this live on YouTube this week, TV Party Tonight, Alexis Haina from Honeysuckle Creations will be on the show. Friend of the network will be on TV Party Tonight to discuss the Powerpuff Girls season one. And then on Wednesday, it's going to be me and Jesse going to a place where there's no more pain, with Life of Agony. We're going to be talking transgender issues and rock and roll and all kinds of fun stuff.
Oh, Lord.
I bet Jesse's very excited about all of this.
I'm not a part of that. It's an education every Wednesday. I'm prepared to learn.
All right. Make sure you listen to those Life of Agony albums beforehand.
Will do.
Thursday, On Trial returns. This week, Sean will be prosecuting the movie Contact, and I will be defending it. Contact with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey.
And you got a job ahead of you.
Next week, or depending on when you're listening to it this week, tomorrow night, depending on when you're listening to this, Damn You Hollywood begins its Summer Sizzlin' tour. Thank you, Jim Cornette, for that. the exception of The Mummy, which I cut from the schedule because I just can't do it, we will be going live every single week between now and the end of July, taking on the big budget blockbusters and big animated features, starting with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which is part of the reason why we're talking about this book tonight. Wednesday night, assuming Robert Cooper can actually get on the show, we'll be discussing the new Vampire album. And then we get a double dose of Sean, as he will be making me review Your Hunter from the Future. I do enjoy the fact that I opened up this show to, you know, this Because You Made Me, for people to get me to, you know, out of my comfort zone. And the first thing Sean went at when did, let me find the worst thing I can get you to watch. So
hey, at least I did Silverado.
You did do Silverado, and it was a grand time. So Because You Made Me, the only show where I turn the network completely over to a novice, to a guest, to a rube, to somebody who
hey, now, wait a second.
It's the only podcast where I give complete control over to somebody and I let them pick the topic. They lead the discussion, and lots of fun will be had. We've done this with Minimalism, the documentary, as Ronnie mentioned, Silverado. We just did one recently, Pat Mullen, and we did the Lizzie McGuire movie.
That's right.
Or When in Rome week. So yeah, we've got a double dose of Guardians. We've got Life of Agony, A Place Where There's No More Pain, Vampire. We've got On Trial, Contact, and Your Hunter from the Future Because Sean Comer Made Me. And that's what we got going on right now. Real quick, at the end of May, we've got two back-to-back theme weeks. We've got a week pretty much dedicated to aliens. And then the following week, we've got an entire week dedicated to pirates. Yo-ho-ho, a pirate's life for me. We are celebrating the new, well, the first week we'll be celebrating the new Aliens movie, Alien Covenant. And then in honor of the new Pirates of the Caribbean, we've got a whole slate of shows on pirates. All very exciting stuff here on the Rattlegeon Broadcasting Network. And finally, if you've noticed that there's been a wrestling content that's been showing up here, that's courtesy of Sean Garmer and the Wrestling to the Max podcast. They've been supplying us with wrestling shows and some football, and we are very appreciative to be sharing our content with them and taking their content for ourselves. So I hope you've enjoyed their shows.
That's right. And ladies and gentlemen, make sure to go give the Rattlegeon Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. You can follow me at Stiznarchy on Twitter. You can follow the show's Twitter at SourceMatCast. Do not hesitate to go onto YouTube. Go to iTunes. You can go to YouTube to find source material on there as well. But make sure to go over to iTunes and rate and subscribe to the Rattlegeon Broadcasting Network. We'd love to hear from you and get some feedback. You know, hey, that any little bit helps. So please absolutely make use of those things at your disposal. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, blogtalkradio.com, and also
TuneIn.
Thank you. TuneIn Radio, blogtalkradio.com is our home. As for the Source Material podcast, listen, May 1st, May 1st, we released an episode. On May 1st, it was me and Ronnie where we covered the 8th issue of Wizard. We talked about some of the fun things from an issue of Wizard from 25 years ago, April of 1992. We talked about the rumors of a Terminator 3 film coming out. We also talked about the guys, an article about them being on the set of Alien 3. and then I made sure to quiz Ronnie with the comic book intelligent quotient, where we all found out that, Deathlok? Cyborg. Deathlok, Cyborg, RoboCop, and Terminator are all Republicans, folks. You go check that, check that out. We had a good time. You might want to listen just to find out, because me and Ronnie made it a competition. I didn't know what the answers were to the comic book IQ. So we both took 30 questions and did a test, challenged each other. You want to find out who that winner is? Give that episode a listen. Upcoming on the Source Material podcast, this episode drops Monday, May 8th. We also, at some point, are going to have, on May 15th, I'm going to be talking to Benjamin J. Cologne, who had the opportunity to go to East Coast Comic Con this past weekend and actually sit and listen to a panel on Kraven's Last Hunt. So can you guess what story we're going to be talking about on the 15th of May? That's correct. You'll hear an episode on Kraven's Last Hunt. And Mark's kind of covered the rest of them. Aliens Defiance, we're going to be talking Nightcrawler for Pirates Week. Ooh, be ready, folks. So, with that being said, for Ronnie Adams, for Mark Rattlegeon, I want to wish everybody a great night.